The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member at tntradio.live. This is the Alan Miller Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome everyone. Hello on the East Coast, if you're just waking up. Welcome everyone across the UK and Europe, and hello in Australia. Good evening. I'm Alan Miller. Welcome back. It's been a busy summer, both here and internationally. In the United Kingdom, we've seen all sorts of challenges and protests to the egregious, unnecessary, undemocratic and unjustified ULEZ. We've now seen that implemented right up to the M25. Mayor Sadiq Khan has ignored the democratic consultation, saying, well, it's not a referendum. He bought the ANPR cameras in advance. Now we've got surveillance all the way round and more of a cash grab and charges. And as people have decided, some of the so-called Blade Runners, to take matters into their own hands and take some of them down and cover them up, he's commissioned 20 vans to go and spy on us all as well, spending more of our money on taxing us all more for something we all said we did not want. And we certainly do not need, in the claim, in the name, that it's for the new emergency, the perpetual emergency, the constant emergency of the public health emergency and the climate emergency. Made up science. Shirley Rodriguez, I mean, this just gets better and better. It gets worse and worse. Shirley Rodriguez, his deputy, trying to tamper and interfere with independent research that shows that there is no correlation with children's lungs impacts. And also asking Imperial College to change their own peer review challenge to the questions in the other Imperial College report that they funded at a tune of £800,000. So we've got an attempt to suffocate and shut down the independent parts of the research and the data to try and legitimize their own spin. People aren't buying it. They're not buying it in London. They're not buying it in Scotland, where the low emission zone charges have come in recently. And they're certainly not buying it in the Midlands, where tens of thousands of people have not paid the clean air zones and they've won their appeals. And we've seen up and down the country, in Warrington, in Southwark, many parts of the Northeast, where citizens are saying, we're not having these impositions, these cameras, these low traffic neighbourhoods, these bollards, these road closures. That's what they are. It's not better services, not better public transport, bollards, road closures and surveillance cameras. So today we've got a show that's very exciting, as we're back for September, 1st September, that's going to be covering international questions and also things within the UK about what the public has been doing and can do, and about some of the technocrats that impose measures that you spin and tell us that we have to do these things. Go sit in the corner, hands on heads, do as you're told, whilst we carry on doing things as we would. So the first guest today, and I'm very excited to be able to welcome him, is someone that many of you will have seen internationally from the very early days of the measures that were implemented around COVID in Canada, sort of completely intertwined with the whole freedom movement there, with the convoy, with questions around the masking mandates, around mandates for jabs and vaccines, and around a whole range of measures. He was very involved in Mothers Against Distancing and challenges around what was happening for children in schools, a very early person to come out and say these things were absolutely about policy and not to do with health, and obviously got a lot of criticism at the time, was called lots of names, is quite outspoken, has been challenging many things in this arena. It is, of course, Chris Sky, live and direct internationally. Chris, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. How are you?
Good. So firstly, where are you right now? Just tell us where you are at the moment, please.
I woke up at 5 a.m. in Vermont, United States of America, where I had previously been banned for over 10 years. So why am I in the U.S.? What am I doing? And where am I going next? It's very simple. We all knew COVID was going to make a comeback. A lot of people didn't realize that the entire premise around the COVID restrictions, the idea that individual rights and freedoms are no longer paramount to a successful society, the idea that we're not independent from government, we have to be dependent on government and government has to be involved in every aspect of our life. These were ideas that were so ingrained in society. We fought world wars and sacrificed millions of lives to preserve them. COVID was the psychological operation designed to circumvent those ideas and replace them with new ideals for a society. And the new ideals were individual rights and freedoms are now selfish and dangerous, and independence from government is tantamount to terrorism. Government and collectivism is the new thing. Everybody needs to be involved in every aspect of your life. What they were really getting us ready for, because COVID was always only temporary, was climate change. The climate change restrictions are a way to enact a de facto world government upon every nation on this planet and remove our rights and freedoms, remove our purchasing power, remove our mobility, and have a complete automatic technocratic control slave grid imposed upon society. So COVID was the way to get us psychologically prepared to accept this new change. And then we were still supposed to be on lockdown while they started putting all the climate change restrictions in, so we wouldn't notice and we wouldn't be able to fight back. But we had a little something called the trucker convoy. We stood up in Canada. We caused everybody to stand up around the world. We got rid of the restrictions momentarily. And immediately what happened? They started pushing climate change like never before. 15-minute cities started popping up all over the world. Personal carbon allowances became a hot topic of discussion. Digital IDs are at the forefront of every national and international policy to be intertwined with vaccine passports. And finally, a digital currency is being taken upon by over 100 countries around the world, which represent over 95% of the GDP of the world. And why do they want the digital currency? Because with a digital currency and a digital identity, not only can they control where you can spend your money, what you can spend your money on, how much you can spend of your money. Well, here's the best part. Once they have you on this system, and I'm talking directly to all you people that think you can comply your way through this, all you people that think wearing a mask, taking a jab, and doing exactly what you're told is going to get you okay. Well, the final nail in the coffin, and they're going to use this on you before they use it on the people like us that are the bad ones, is an expiring digital currency. So now, if you don't spend all the money you made by the end of the month, the government's going to take it back under the guise of you hoarding more than you need. So now you could have Hunter Biden running the world. It doesn't matter how inept and how disenfranchised or out of touch with reality the controllers are. They don't have to do shit. They just have to sit back on their private jets, float around on their yachts, eat their caviar, pheasant, and prime rib, and watch as at the end of each month, every single one of you gets reset back to zero. And you can never.
Well, let's come in there. Let's come in. Yeah, let's come in there because you've said a lot. And I really wanted to start off with talking to you and asking some questions about the Freedom Convoy and the impacts you thought that had. But I definitely want to come back to this question about central bank digital currency, programmable currency. It's intriguing, this point you've just made. So we'll definitely come back to that. But just the original part, many people remember you early doors. Just saying, I'm telling you now, this is what's going on here, and you're either going to get out and challenge it or you're not. From your point of view, you've just said that, obviously it was very inspiring to everyone around the world to see the Freedom Convoy of the truckers. How much do you think that challenge to President Trudeau and what happened, people have continued from that, are still engaged in questioning and asking questions and challenging some of the new measures in terms of technocratic impositions or not? How's that playing out at the moment from your point of view?
Well, the trucker convoy represented what I was trying to get people to do from day one, which was called united non-compliance. Everybody coming together under one banner and just saying no to every one of these restrictions under the guise of love and protection. That's what the trucker convoy was all about. It was people standing up, saying no with love, with protection, for their friends, for their family, for their country. And that inspired everybody to stand up. If we didn't do that, nobody would have stood up. We'd still be under lockdowns. We'd be way worse off than we are right now. We caused them to have to cause an audible. They had to pivot. When we got rid of the restrictions, they never counted on that. And that's why, if you look, Agenda 2030 has already been pushed back officially to Agenda 2031. And now they know that they cannot push the climate change garbage into society like they could the COVID restrictions. COVID restrictions, people were legitimately scared. People legitimately felt guilty. People had to worry about fines, going to jail, losing their job, etc. Enter climate change. Nobody thinks that them driving their SUV to work is going to kill grandma. Nobody really believes that if they eat meat every day for the next month, the whole world's going to boil over and society's just going to crumble. Nobody believes those lies. They're a lot harder to push. And because nobody believes the lies, because nobody's afraid, because nobody feels guilty, they can't push that shit through. So that's why they're bringing back the COVID restrictions. They're going to bring back lockdowns and mandates. So we're back in that state of mind where we're in a traumatic state, where we're manipulatable, where we can be told what to do, where we're not going to fight back. And when we're more worried about our jobs and our families and our health, they can start pushing through the 15-minute city, the personal carbon allowance, the digital ID, the digital currency, and they can build that prison grid around us right in front of your face. And the average person will pretend like they don't even notice because they're too wrapped up with the COVID restrictions. That is their plan. Okay. Do I believe it's going to work? No.
Okay, so let's just unpack that a little bit when you say their plan and everything, but let's start with the ideas and the question, because since the Club of Rome and limits to growth and the discussions around sustainable development, which is an oxymoron in itself, there's been a big consideration in capitalism. It's the kind of the new capitalism is not one of burgeoning transformation and the Victorian idea of transformation and what America represented perhaps, or then later some things we've seen in Asia, but much more limits, controls, risk averse. But that's been playing out for quite some time, several decades, with green initiatives become popularized. When you say they, I just want to put this to you, because it seems that there's many questions around this. Within nation states, there are democratic technocrats that have got very used to not being under pressure. And they have, many of them share similar ideas, so-called divisions between, let's say, the Republicans and Democrats, or Labour and Conservative, or whatever it might. Those old enlightened ideas you talked about, those principles of free speech, association, expression, all of those key things, they've become kind of less important and often seen as a problem, and much more about technocratic impositions. So when you say they've got this plan or they're going to do that, surely many of these ideas have been playing out for quite some time, separate to COVID, which was a recent thing. They've been playing out over decades and they've gained momentum. The Tories in Britain had net zero as part of their manifesto, although we never was quite sure what that meant. So how, well, just explain what you mean when you say this is all part of this plan to do it, when they were, it's kind of been part of a discussion for quite a long time. And who do you see as the they?
Okay, well, everybody knows that for decades, probably longer, they've been planning a de facto one world government with one rule of law, one currency, etc., for the entire world, which makes it much easier for people to be controlled. On the other part of that, who's going to end up controlling this? So that's why they're still infighting. That's why they're never going to end up being able to create it. It's a failed idea before it starts. But that doesn't mean that they're not going to try. And they decided many decades ago that the idea of natural disasters and the environment and human beings being the problem is the best method. Because if human beings are the problem, the only way we can save the world is by controlling human beings. And if you want to have one world government, you want to control everybody, you need to have something that makes everybody scared, everybody unite, everybody basically bend to a world authority. And that's why they chose climate change. But like I said, they knew climate change isn't guilty enough to get people into that state of mind, and nobody believes in it, and nobody's afraid of it, and they can't really enforce it. So they use COVID. They use COVID to psychologically prepare society, get us in that state of mind where we'll accept more draconian measures, we'll accept limits on our freedom, where we'll accept the idea that humans are a problem that need to be controlled. And now that they got us in that state of mind, the last decades of all these climate stuff that they've been pushing down our throats is coming to fruition, and they're trying to do a giant blitzkrieg and get it all done at once. One time, redo society so there's no more rights and freedoms. We are all serfs to Mother Earth, which is a made-up entity. And the they are the international families that are basically sovereign wealth funds that have been around for hundreds, in some cases, thousands of years. Imagine you were born into a family that had already been around for 1,000 years. And by the time you were 18 years old, you were handed $100 billion and you were handed all this wealth and all this knowledge and your family owned companies all over the world. And then you got to hand that down to your kids and so on and so forth. There are people on this planet worth trillions of dollars. The idea that Jeff Bezos with his few billions is the richest man in the world is absolute joke. That's for public consumption. The public knows absolutely nothing about what goes on behind the scenes. And there are bloodlines and there are families that have been around, like I said, hundreds, in some cases, thousands of years. These are the people that really control things. These are the people that have they have the WHO in their pocket, the World Economic Forum in their pocket. And those people you see at the World Economic Forum, like Klaus Schwab and all of that, are simply agents of these people, just like the bankers are agents of those people. And just like the government are agents of the bankers. It's like the pyramid. When you think you're at the top of the pyramid, you got to keep climbing. The bankers, the government definitely ain't the top. The bankers aren't the top. The World Economic Forum and World Health Organization aren't the top. But the World Health Organization is now the most dangerous entity on the planet because it is being provided authority that supersedes national governments and national governing documents, creating a de facto world government. When you have an unelected organization of bureaucrats that can make international policies become national policies globally simultaneously, how can people say they don't have a de facto world government?
On that note, we're going to go to a quick break. I'm Alan Miller. I'm here with Chris Sky. This is TNT Radio. Join us just after this.
TNT Radio's Charlie Robinson.
Did the left just step on a giant Donald Trump-shaped rake with this one? Because it feels like giving this mugshot, which by all accounts is going to be probably the most viewed photograph in the history of mankind by the end of, oh, I don't know, maybe by the end of the weekend. This seems like a really poor strategy on their part to dampen the enthusiasm for Donald Trump. He's never been more popular than he is right now, right?
No, I mean, he's holding, what, a 30, 40, 50-point lead over any of the other contestants on the Republican side, and pretty much anyone that makes a t-shirt right now is going to have that picture on it. Yeah. So, I mean, I think they just basically made this man president without even realizing it.
They're so bad at optics.
Charlie Robinson on TNT Radio.
Radio works because of its ability to personalize to the listener.
What's exciting these days is that people are rediscovering it. You know, people are really rediscovering just how powerful radio is, how ubiquitous it is. It's in our cars, it's in our homes. There are so many new ways to access it. It's everywhere.
To find out more, go to tntradio.live. Alan Miller on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back. I'm in here with Chris Sky. We're talking about a whole range of issues, from what happened with COVID to broader questions of the environment and the so-called permanent state of crisis. Chris, you were talking about your view about how, you know, what one world thing might look like. I suppose my question to you is this. Like you said with the Freedom Convoy, when the public stand up and challenge things in their own sovereign nation states, when people still do believe in the idea of democracy, liberty, fraternity, when they stand shoulder to shoulder and they insist on those rights together, the liberties that have been won through several, you know, like the French Revolution, the English Revolution, the American Revolution, those ideas of what this free society are. Surely that's a way to challenge, whether one believes it's like a few families or if people, some people might vehemently disagree with that view, but think that technocrats amalgamate, they've been unaccountable for a long time, they get involved in policy wonk thinking, they're not under any pressure, unlike the previous movements that put them under a lot of pressure from both the left and the right in the 20th century. And they kind of all go to Davos and they do these things, but they all kind of float around in similar ideas, the Blair, Tony Blair kind of David Cameron blend, blancmange. But when people stand up in a kind of sovereign way in their democratic nation states and stand together with solidarity and insist on these things, It can stop them. So the people are important within all of this, right? I mean, that's part of what you think. I mean, you said that you didn't think it's going to work for them, and you certainly don't think it's inevitable, right? Because I hear from some people, they say, well, this is just it. Not only is it a plan, but it's all just going to happen. And it's almost like they're saying, well, you might as well just have stayed in lockdown. You don't take that approach, clearly, right?
The inevitability is they lose. Number one, they're never going to be able to have control because nobody's going to be able to decide who's in control. These are all control freaks, so they're all going to want control. So as soon as if they ever got a modicum of success and they started amalgamating control and we actually started losing, they would start infighting amongst each other, sabotaging each other, killing each other, and eventually we would win. The other reason we're inevitably going to win is you cannot go back to sleep. You can only wake up. So every single day that goes by, even if only one person out of a billion woke up that day, people are waking up. And that is why they already pushed back their plan to agenda. It was agenda 21 before. Then it was agenda 2030. Now it's agenda 2031. And every year they're going to have to move it back more because every year people like us stand up and fight. That's just the reality of human nature. Even if you can get 90% of the people, the sheep, the weaklings, the scared, the ones that don't want anything to do with anything, even if you can get them, there's always going to be a section of humanity that wants their freedom, that wants their rights, and are willing to fight and even die for those rights and freedoms. And whenever that happens, people automatically, slowly but surely, join the winning side. That's how it is. People are sheep. They'll join whatever side they think is going to win. That's why 9 out of 10 put on the mask, because that was the winning side. But as soon as enough people said no to the mask, oh, all of a sudden, nobody wanted to wear the mask anymore. Why? Did they not afraid of COVID anymore? No, because the average person is a follower. That's the reality. So that means all you compliers, you're all irrelevant. You can all do the same shit you did last time. Guess what's going to happen? I'm not going to wear a mask. I'm not going to take a jab. I'm not going to change my life. And all you fools are going to get side effects. You're going to lose your business. You're going to lose your lifestyle. You're going to get fatter and weaker and stupider. And the more you comply, the shittier your life's going to be. And the more you comply.
Well, can I just jump in there, right? Because
go ahead.
I was going to talk about something else. But this idea troubles me in the sense that our fellow citizens, our neighbors, our colleagues, our friends, our family, we might have really serious disagreements with things, but people historically have been conscious agents. The whole idea of agency, the idea that we can shape and curate the world that we're in, that we can do it together, the idea that historically, from that transition, you know, only a couple of hundred years ago, only about 5% of people could sign their surname. Now we have a massively literate, engaged world where people, you know, you might have discrepancies with how education happens, you might have concerns and questions about dominant ideas, etc. But the idea that in the modern period, the public, ordinary people, not lords, not kings and queens, but ordinary people can shape and inform the world. And the idea that there's only a few good ones, like a few good men and women, just a few, and they're the brave ones, and then everyone else is sheep, seems like a reflection to me, right, of the elite's attitude of contempt to the public, to all of us. This attitude that we're all like need to just have things being nudged to us or imposed on us, because how are we ever going to know? The experts will tell us, the bureaucrats will tell us, because we're all too stupid. We're consuming our way to Armageddon with the planet. We're just mad, bad, and dangerous, and we need the good. It seems like a mirror image of that sometimes. When I hear all that, like the sheep, the weak, the cowards, why not have an approach that thinks that everyone can be one, hearts and minds, that we all have capabilities to curate, we all have creativity and innovation as humans, and some might be braver than others, that could be true, but it seems a disparaging view of our fellow citizens that we'd want to win over.
The reality is that's reality. That's human nature. There's an experiment where they will literally sit five people down in a chair. They will draw three lines on a board, line A, B, and C, all completely different lengths. Then they'll draw another line at the side that's equal in length to line B, clearly. They will ask every single person on the panel which line is it exactly like line B. All the people on the panel are part of the experiment except for one dude. All the people that are part of the experiment can clearly see that line B matches, but they'll say line C, even though it's almost twice as long and it's dead as day, not accurate. And any child aged 1 to 100 can see that line B is equal in length to line B. Well, guess what happens in that experiment when your average human being is put up against that discrepancy and all four of the other people say the lie? 70% of the time, that person being experimented upon will go along with the lie, knowing full well it's a lie, knowing full well it's as obvious as a line this big versus a line this big in front of their face, and 70% will go along with a blatant, irrefutable, easily disproved, right in front of their face lie. That is the reality of human nature. That is why the elites are so brazen, because like they said in their little World Economic Forum video clips there, humans are like hackable animals. The average human is so absolutely brainwashed and they have no idea. The average person, they call you the 99% for a reason. And I'm going to give you a little bit of insight to reality. Your entire day, your entire 24-hour time period has been programmed to completely make you ignorant, detached from reality, and to lock you in what they call the rat race. And I can explain it to you very simply. Why do you think they have all your favorite shows at 9 or 10 o'clock at night? Because they want you up nice and late and all at the same time as the rest of the sheep. Why? Because they know you're going to need your 8 hours like good little people that you've been trained for your entire life. So you're going to wake up at the exact same time as everybody else. You're going to rush like everybody else. Leave the house without doing anything properly. You're going to spend 2 hours in traffic getting to your job like everybody else. You're going to work your day job like everybody else. Then you're going to come home during the same time as everybody else, sit through another 2 hours of traffic. So now when you do your math, you spent 8 hours sleeping. You spent like 3 to 4 hours getting to work. So you're already at like 10, 11 hours of your 24. You spent 8 hours at work. So you're at 19 or 20 hours of your 24 hours. And then, of course, you spend time eating throughout the day. So you're already at like around 21. The average person is going to end up with maybe 2 free hours of time every day. And what do they do with that free time? They watch porno. They play on Instagram. They watch their favorite TV show. And then they go back to bed and they do it all again. And they wonder why they don't know anything about anything, why they can't get anywhere in life, and why there's only a few people in the world that are very, very successful, and the rest of them just can't seem to get anywhere. You are doing it to yourself.
Just on that. I mean, so the thing is, even if your premise was, right, and things like soap shows, and we know the history of what happened with radio and with television and, you know, selling products and all of that, right? And the history of the market, although there was a whole load of people that did dispense with a ruling elite. If you take the example of the French Revolution or the English Revolution, Civil War, you could then make the point, well, most of them were just sheep. They just followed different leaders.
They didn't dispense
my question.
Wrong, but you're wrong. They didn't dispense with the elite during the revolution. They dispensed with one of the elite's agents. You think the kings that were running the country, they're the same as the governments running the country today. They are puppets of the true elites. So if we have a revolution today, which would never happen because people are so afraid of their own shadow, but if we did and we rose up and we pulled all the politicians out of their houses and we lit them all on fire, guess what? You didn't kill any elites. You killed their bottom feeders. Congratulations. And that's why
we can come back to that. I mean, I think there's that I challenge some of those ideas. My main question to you though is this: how successful is calling people sheep and saying they're all just scared? Or would it not be a better strategy to try and convince and win hearts and minds with people? Like, this is a genuine question, right? If you go into a bar and you say 80, 90% of you are just not done, you're done, but there's only a few. Or is it not better surely to say, look, this is how we can all do this, inspire them. We're all potentially able to change things. We all can do those things. Let's go for it. Genuine question.
The genuine answer, once again, is most humans are not going to get into this fight. Most humans are going to do what they're told by the perceived authority figure. Most humans are not going to stick their neck out for you, no matter how much time and energy you waste on them. So you have to get to the reality. You can try to challenge anything I said. You can be challenging facts with your opinions, so it'll be a completely false challenge. But the reality is, the average person is a follower, not a leader. You cannot challenge that fact. That is a fact. We are a society of followers, not leaders, period. We are also a society that has been proven to follow the crowd even when we know it's a lie. That's also proven. So we also know by fact, you cannot save everybody. So why are you going to waste your time on the people that are enabling this, the people that are responsible for this? We already know the people we need to talk to. There's 30% of us that never complied. We don't need to talk to those people. They're already on the same page. They're one of us. They're not going to comply again. What we need to do is focus on the people that complied the first time out of all the trauma and all the coercion that never really wanted to, that are now at the point where they are strong enough. And notice I said strong enough, because everybody that complied is weak and stupid. Let me say that again. If you complied, you're weak and you're stupid. I don't care what excuse you gave me, your job, your grandmother, your travel, you're weak and you're stupid. Because if everybody said no, they couldn't kick you out of your job. They couldn't stop you from travel. They couldn't stop you from seeing grandma. But because you're weak and stupid, you gave in. It's like if somebody's trying to kidnap you if somebody's trying to rob your house and they come and they put a gun to your head and say, give me the combo to the safe. Are you going to comply and give them that combo? If you do, they're going to shoot you in the fucking head and you're going to be dead and they're going to take what you want. If you don't comply, they can't really kill you, can they? Because they're not going to get the combo to the safe. The same exact thing applies to COVID. All you people that complied are the person that just got shot in the head because you gave them what and you have no leverage left.
Got it.
Once you've complied, you become what we call a useful idiot. A useful idiot is also the first to become what they call a useless eater. So not only are you enabling, not only are you sabotaging the rest of humanity and yourself, you are putting yourself at the front of the line as the most expendable asset of humanity, and you'll be the first on the chopping block.
Okay, so there are sort of other examples, obviously, peppered throughout the modern period in the history of the 20th century across the world, but you only have to take certain examples like the suffragettes or the civil rights movement, or even things like apartheid in South Africa, where lots of people, not everyone, and obviously people were divided, people had different views. You used the example of the Second World War earlier in the show, but where people stood up and challenged and argued the points about rights, universal rights and freedoms, national self-determination, post-colonialism, struggles across the world. These were ideas that were inflammatory and popular across the board and had purchase. A lot of that's gone away now, and I get that it's quite easy to look at the world and think that no one's ever going to do anything, but that wasn't the case even in the last 50 to 100 years. But I suppose what I want to do, because we're going to go to a break in a second, is I want you to open up this question again. Just explain briefly, if you would, before we go to the break. The programmable digital currency, the point you made at the start about how people at the end of the month are going to have money taken out of their account. Could you just explain what you mean by that, please?
It's very simple. It's going to get to the point, if you live in your 15-minute city in your mixed-use building, you're going to live in the building, work in the building, go to the gym, go to the Starbucks, do your laundry, everything in the building. When it gets to that point, you're going to be on that point because you have not enough money to survive. You're not going to be able to buy a car. You're not going to be able to travel. You're going to be on a universal basic income. The government's going to give you what you need to survive. Now, to make it even more controlling, at the end of every month or at the end of every 45 days, whatever money was given to you will expire and it will no longer be able to be used. It will be recuperated by the state. Just like when you buy one of those gift cards right now, a Visa gift card, if you don't use it every month, you lose money off it. You lose money off it. They're going to do the exact same thing with your currency. They're going to ban cash, so you can't use anything but their digital currency. Then they're going to make it so if you don't spend it, it goes away. That way, you can never save. You can never pass anything on to your children. You can never elevate your social status. It doesn't matter how smart you are. It doesn't matter how frugal you are. It doesn't matter how much you try to save, how many secret other jobs you take. If there's no cash, you cannot get anywhere. And that's the idea. They want to have complete control over everything you do, including where you go, where you live, what you eat, and what your children will be capable of doing. And they want you locked in that control grid for generations to come. And if you want that, all you got to do is put your mask back on, allow yourself to be contact traced and tested, and then go take your next round of jabs. And for those of you that survive, because you already took four or five of the first ones, like complete fucking idiots, and you're going to take another five, you'll more than likely be dead. And if you think that's a conspiracy theory, well, what's holding you back? Go take a vaccine every week. Why even wait? Why wait for the next booster? Why don't you just take one every other week? It obviously will give you better protection if protection wanes, right? If they're so safe and effective, why don't you just go take 100 of them all at once and let me know how it works out for you?
I'm Alan Miller. I'm here with the ever entertaining Chris Skye. This is TNT Radio. We'll be back just after this next break. Come back with us then.
With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
The case of the bouncing bump, or eight ball in the side pocket, just got stranger. Astute listeners will recall that at first, the Secret Service reported that a plasticine envelope with a suspicious white powder was found in the library of the White House residence. Wait, did we say in the residence? No. We meant in a cubby outside the West Wing visitor's entrance. And then the story changed yet again, this time with the cocaine found at the West Executive Drive entrance, right where Cacklin Camilla's limo is parked. And now former Secret Service agent Dan Bongino is reporting that the blow wasn't left behind by accident, but that it was a delivery, according to a White House insider. Does Uber Eats now deliver booger sugar? Or perhaps it was DoorDash? Inquiring minds want to know. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Running a business in the digital age isn't easy. Luckily, signing up for Digital Boost is. It's your very own digital toolbox, packed with everything to teach you how to save time, increase productivity, and improve your company's presence online. Sign up for free at digitalboost.co.nz and make the internet work for you. That's me typing it in on my computer, like you should be.
If you're talking about it,
China sent that surveillance balloon over.
We're talking about it. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back, everyone. So, Chris, I wanted to ask you before we get into the latter part of this show, in Britain, for instance, we've had several campaigns recently that have had an impact. So, for instance, we had a challenge to the vaccine mandate, as well as a vaccine passports. And there was different levels of success, but the vaccine mandate actually got stopped. Now, there were arguments about why it was stopped, but one big part of it was a significant section of people that were in the health sector refusing to do it, and people campaigning, We It Together and others, many others, challenging it, putting videos up saying they're not going to do it. They've worked for a year. Why do they have to do it? This is not part of our essential rights. And there was a fight back and a pushback. More recently, we've seen the same with cash. We've seen the same with debanking, with people being taken down from platforms and rules and impositions that are saying we can't do that. We've seen that now the government has been forced to intervene to say that people have to be able to take out significant amounts of cash, both from ATMs that they were closing everywhere and banks closing in different places. And as well as platforms that have been deplatforming people. We know that the lockdown files, Twitter files, all the different things that have happened in terms of censorship and spying, but people campaigned and some things have been put in place. I guess my question to you is this. You said about how it sort of shone a light with the convoy, and you say to people just need to not comply. But do you see an alternative, a better way of organizing? You know, you said a lot about, and we'll talk a bit more about 15-minute cities and low traffic neighborhoods and all these things with surveillance, smart cities, but not just not complying. But have you got a particular view about what would be better? And what people might, how they might want to organize, or as an alternative to what you see as the problem? Because it sounds like what you're saying is there's no political solution. All of it is linked up to these things. I think that's what you're saying. Correct me if I'm wrong on that. And how do you see a better way of doing it? And should you kind of win people to that?
Non-compliance is the only way. That's it. United non-compliance, everybody coming together to just say no, is the only way. Broken it down into three phases. Phase one is the global awakening, getting enough people to realize that nothing is about health and safety. Everything is about control. Everything that you just mentioned, whether it was COVID, climate change, banking, internet censorship, what do they all have in common? They're not about your health and safety. They're all about government having more control over you. Over what you can do, over what you can say, over what you can spend, over if you can spend. Everything. They want to have complete control. It's that simple. So how do you stop somebody that's trying to have control over you? How does somebody have control over you? Unless they put a gun to your head physically, they're doing it through coercion and they're getting you to comply. It's not rocket science, people. You are complying. You are the reason you're being controlled. Nobody can control you unless you do what they say. If I tell you to jump off a bridge and you jump off a bridge, you got controlled. If I tell you to close your business and you close your business, it's no different. But you guys seem to think that there is a difference, because as long as they tell you, oh, if you follow my orders, it makes you a good person. And if you don't follow my orders, it makes you a grandma killer. Now it makes it okay for you to be a beta male little bitch living on his knees, bending over and doing exactly what you're told, because otherwise they might call you a bad name. You cannot be controlled unless you're a little bitch that does what you're told. So you want to know what I do? I do the exact opposite of what the government tries to tell me. They say stay home, I go out. They say close your business, I open it longer. They say stay 5-6 feet apart, I go and hug you. That's what you do. You grow some fucking balls and you make decisions that you know are right. You stop doing what's easy, you stop doing what's nice, and you start doing what's right. It's really not that hard. The fact that I have to explain this to people, adults all over the world, that the way to not be controlled is to simply not do as you're fucking told, is pretty sad. So men, I know you have low testosterone. I know you've been demasculated for decades, but it's time to fucking pick up your balls, put them back in your pants, because we already saw what happens. We already know where this goes. And for all you friggin' morons that tell me all we got to do is comply to get through this. Oh yeah. How did that work last time? As soon as you put the mask on and you complied like a little bitch, what did they say? Now it's time for contact tracing and testing. But just comply and everything will be fine. So you listened. And then what? Now it's mandatory vaccinations. Oh, but just comply and everything will be fine. And then what? Oh, now it's vaccine passports and you can't even go to the gym or a restaurant. Why? Was it because you complied? Yes. So why did we stop all of this? Well, we had something called a trucker convoy where millions of people decided not to comply. And the government was so angry, they arrested some, took some people's business license, trampled others with horses, beat others with guns, froze others' bank accounts. But why did they do that? Because we were doing the right thing. We stood up. We said no. And that's how we got our freedoms back. And now I already see so-called men, this is why I'm fired up, making excuses, already preparing themselves to put that mask back on their face so they can get on their knees and suck some more government dick. That is not a man. If you put a mask on, you are not a man. You're a fucking bitch. And I'll tell you to your face every time. Every time I walk around and I see someone in a mask, I still see it today, even in the States. I was in California. There had to be at least 10 people in the gym wearing a mask. I walk up to every single one of them. I don't care if you're a man, woman, child. I say, why are you wearing that? What the hell is wrong with you? Take it off your face. And that's what every single one of you need to do. You need to get angry. You need to get involved. And you need to start talking to the 70% of the dumb, weak, useless people that complied the first time, that are already getting ready to comply the second time. The name of the game, ladies and gentlemen, has to be prevention. We've been through this. We know where it goes. We know how to stop it. So get off your ass and go find one of the people that took 6 jabs that doesn't really want to take a jab anymore. It won't be too hard to convince them not to put the mask back on when they realize the mask is going to lead them to their 7th injection. Out of the 70% of the people, there's got to be at least 10% that have the brains, the balls to not comply again. And if we can get the United...
Okay, so on that note, yeah, on that note, and you're obviously in the States talking about this, which we should come back to in a second, but I suppose the question is this: don't comply is your, that's very clear. You've made that point, but you've said that you think that this, and one of the things about the freedom movement is many people have different viewpoints about the whys and about what's driving this. And I've always said, that's okay. You can have different views about why things are happening, as long as we have a common interest or common purpose at the point of challenging things, right? And trying to get them beaten and fighting together for whatever reason. We can discuss those different ideas and we can row and we can work them out, and people can try and win over people to different ideas. But my question is also this, because if you think it's not just about this, but we're living in this Truman show with an elite that's doing all this, what is there a better apart once you don't comply? Let's say you get a significant section that just don't do that. Then you just carry on living back in the way it was 10 years ago, 50 years ago. I mean, what would you like to see happen? Is it local autonomous communities? Well, I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth. How do you see, once you get people not complying, say, well, we're not doing that. So that's a counter. That's a negative to what they're trying to impose currently, in your view. What beyond that? You're still in a Truman show from what you described, right? You've got the TV at night, you're getting up in the morning. I mean, is that enough freedom? Would you like to see more? Have you got a kind of idea for this?
Those are all people's choices. Nobody's mandating anybody to stay up at 10 o'clock at night. If you were smart and you listened to what I said, you wouldn't watch TV at all. Guess what? You'd go to bed at 7 o'clock. You'd wake up at 3 in the morning. You'd do all the stuff you need to do in the morning. Go to the gym, go there, drive to work before all the traffic. So then they end up with an extra like 5-6 hours a day. And you know what an extra 5 hours a day looks like? That's an extra 2 months out of the year, a full 60 days, a full 60 24-hour days. So even if you just made minimum wage and worked those full 60 24-hour days of free time that you had, you would be exponentially more successful than 99% of the rest of the population that simply did what they're told. And that's why. And that's why it's so easy to get you to put on a mask and do everything else, because you don't even understand that you've been complying with everything your entire life. Since you were a baby, they've been training you to be a sheep, training you to comply, training you to be subordinate to any supposed authority figure. And that is why when somebody tells you to put on a mask, you freeze up, you tense up, your heart rate goes up, and you're like, oh my God, confrontation. And the average person will put that mask on because they are so weakened beyond subhuman level of patheticness that they'll do it. Even now, even after going through 3 years of torture, after seeing people lose their life, lose their business, lose everything, watch how fast the average person puts that mask back on. So do I have faith in humanity? I have faith in a very small segment of humanity, and that's all I need, because that's always the only thing that's ever changed the world. A small segment of people with brains, balls, that are willing to stand up and do something. And for all the people that aren't going to do it, we already know you're useless. We already know that you're going to talk shit about us. The reality is, you talk shit from over there because you knew if you were right in front of our face, you wouldn't say a fucking word, because we would rip your throats out and feed them to you on a grand scale. And that's why we're the fighters. That's why we're the ones that matter. You're the ones that don't matter. I don't care. You can call me an asshole, call me whatever you want. The moment you comply with the agenda, you have rendered yourself irrelevant, insignificant, and an enemy of humanity. It's that fucking simple. I don't care what excuse you come up with. You are an enemy to your fellow man, and you need to wake the fuck up.
Okay, so always very specific and clear in case anyone wasn't sure what Chris was saying. Just, you're in Vermont now. Tell us about this tour you're doing in the States. What's your goal for it? What different places are you going to? You've been to a few places. Just give us a rundown of it, if you would.
I'm doing what I'm calling a tour to change the world. And it's not just in the United States. I am here to unite the entire Commonwealth with one message and hopefully rub off on all the people in the Commonwealth so you all become at least a little bit more like me. A little bit. You don't have to become me, but just enough of me that you'll be able to stand up for yourself. So the only way to do this, they're coming at us on an international level. They're coming at us every country at once. So we got to fight back in the same way. So I started in Canada, obviously, because that's where I was. And I knew I needed to get into the States. I was banned from the States. I've been turned away multiple times. So I came in on a bus from Mexico, tried to sneak in. I was invited to Texas for an American Liberty Award nomination, the only non-American nominated. And when I got to the border, they scanned my passport. It set off alarms. They grabbed me. They arrested me. They kept me there for 7-8 hours until they realized who I was and why I was coming to the States. And then they said, welcome to the United States. Good luck on your award. And congratulations, I won the award. And as soon as people found out I was in the States, my tour began. And I was doing live shows. I did Alex Jones InfoWars in Texas with Alex, with myself, Owen Schroyer War Room, American Journal with Harrison. Then I went over to Florida, Sarasota, did Stu Peters, did an event with General Flynn for anti-human trafficking, drove all the way back to Texas to see Mike Adams, Health Ranger in studio, then to New Mexico with King Bao, then to Colorado with Daily Conservative and some live events, then to Las Vegas for the Reawakening America tour with thousands and thousands of patriots and dozens of media outlets. And now I'm in Vermont. I have an event later today, and then I'm going to be in Connecticut before I am flying out to the UK. I'm going to be in the UK from the 19th to the 2nd. I'm going to be hosting the worldwide rally. I'm going to be filming a documentary on 15-minute cities in Oxford. And after I'm done there, I'm going to be finishing up in Australia. The idea is to unite the Commonwealth with one message, and that message is just say no, and unite the Commonwealth with one goal, and that goal is united noncompliance. And the three phases, the global awakening, we need billions to awaken, not just millions. Phase two is taking action. And you talked about that. Everybody has the ability to take action. You don't just have to be a worldwide speaker. You can just go talk to at least one person that complied last time and doesn't want to comply this time and get them on your side. If 30% of us that did not comply get even one other person to not comply, and our global united noncompliance can hit a threshold of 40%, they can never impose another restriction. They can never impose another mandate. And they can never impose their de facto world government. That is the strategy that I am bringing. That's the message I'm bringing. And that's the action I'm bringing. All at once, the message is the action. And I am the one that's bringing it to all these countries around the world. So everybody has the same message. Everybody can speak as one, act as one, organize as one, combine our connections, combine our resources, and press back against this tyranny once and for all. And when we beat it, what's it going to be like? I remember you said what we wanted to be. Here's the kicker. Whatever we want. Once we beat these globalists, we can reshape the world in any way we imagine. And the way I'm going to imagine it is a way that's going to be better for everybody, not just the people at the very, very top, because we have the resources, we have the money, we have the technology where we can raise everybody's standard of living to that of kings of past. And I believe that's the path we need to go on.
So very interesting. Thank you for that. We've done a lot of work in Oxford. We know some of the people have been campaigning against low traffic neighborhoods, 15-minute cities, the impositions with those things. We'll talk about that. I'll introduce you to a few people. It'll be good for your documentary. We have a big event at Together on the 29th of September. Big, huge. It's going to be in Westminster, our two-year anniversary, all about freedom, about the public doing exactly what you're talking about, getting involved for the next stage, because there's a general election, there's mayor elections and this year upcoming. And with our work, challenging things like international health regulations, the amendments to the WHO, and all of the things about sovereign citizens. So we'd love to have you involved and come to that. Chris, thank you so much for joining us on the show. Effervescent, lively as ever. Final 5 seconds before we go to the break. Give us a shout.
Guys, I know I was being rough on you, but the reality is you cannot be negative. You cannot give in to despair, anger, vengeance, spite, or hate. So even if you're mad at me right now, channel that anger and make it come out to something good. Remain positive, be positive, and fight back. I love you all.